Davies, half field across the face of goal, and Davies does that cross the line, it does, and Canada have scored against the USA for the first time since 2007 and have the lead that frankly they deserve.
For those of you just turning in, it's not wrong.
Cavallini's in here, and there's another goal. Canada rub it in. Lucas Cavallini completes the horror show from the United States. Canada are going to have their first win over the USA since 1985.
Have you heard about the lonesome loser?
This was almost a new low after the failure to qualify for the World Cup.
Well, I'm not sure that's going to be, this is going to be lower than that, Ian, but I know what you're getting at, because I think almost 2 years to the day of that calamity in Trinidad, I didn't think you'd see this kind of performance. Listen, you can lose games. That's part of sports. It's part of athletics. It's what happens in competition. Canada came into this one saying this is going to be their cup final, and they were up for it. They were up for the challenge. What is alarming to me is what you're getting from the United States. And by the way, overplaying is not a style. You've got to dig, you've got to roll your sleeves up, you've got to dig in, you've got to fight, you've got to be intense, you've got to get after it at some point. And at one point, you're looking at it saying, well, we've got the Christian Pulisics and the Weston McKinneys and Josh Sargents of the world. I don't care. The team needs to show up on the same page and act as if they're committed to the program. You tell me right now, you watch that game, do you believe that this is what it's going to be? The United States men's national team, you're in a crisis. You know it. And anyone else that tries to deny it is full of it. They are in crisis mode. And lucky for them, this isn't World Cup qualifying, because they'd be in serious trouble right now.
Yeah, they don't have to do the World Cup semi-final type qualifying under this new system. You do wonder where U.S. soccer is going. And they have to play Canada again next month.
Gonna have to face up. All right, time to talk a little football, and we're gonna talk a little national football, and we're gonna talk obviously about Inter Miami too. Some issues there with Inter Miami we'll get into. We do it every week with Michelle Kaufman, who does an excellent job of covering Inter and football overall for the Miami Herald. You can follow her, like I and so many others do, at Kauf Sports, and catch her work at the Miami Herald website or at your doorstep. Good afternoon, Michelle. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm better than the U.S. national team, that's for sure.
Wow. I mean, you and I were going back and forth last night on the text, and I just sent you a little old Canada. I could not believe what I was seeing. And then, you know, to watch Pulisic get, you know, sent to the bench in the 60th minute, and obviously he was unhappy. The kid was crying how furious he was not being in there. It was baffling to me, and I can understand Taylor Twellman, you know, kind of losing it at that moment because of the frustrations and watching. We know that this country has great athletes, and yet somehow or another, man, they can't find a way to cross the threshold here in this sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's I didn't really think, you know, after they lost to Trinidad and Tobago and didn't make the World Cup in 2018. I mean, I thought that was definitely the low point. But the game last night, it's not as big of a low point because it's not a game that really matters that much. But still, it's there's, you know, Canada is obviously much improved, and Alphonso Davies is, you know, he's a really good player. He's playing on Bayern Munich, and he's a very good player. But the United States hadn't lost to Canada in 34 years. They had won 17 times in a row. And it's, you know, it's just very, very, very disappointing. And the thing that's maybe most alarming, I think, is that there seems to be, other than Taylor Twellman and you and, you know, some other real diehards, there seems to be more apathy than outrage about the men's national team. It's like,
it's Marlins. They suck. It's very, you know, Marlins. Very Marlins.
It's like, we know they stink. We expect them to stink. So we're not that surprised. You know, instead of there being the outrage that there was when they lost to Trinidad and Tobago, I really feel like there was outrage because they had made so many World Cups in a row, and it just seemed like a real setback. But since then, I have to say, it's been like 2 years now. Since then, it sort of seems like the status quo is, oh, the U.S. women's team is great and the men's team is not. And that's just what people have come to expect. And as long as people come to expect, and maybe even they themselves don't believe that they're good, then they're never going to be good. You know, they have to be held accountable. All these players have to be held accountable. The coach has to be held accountable. And it's really not acceptable to play that way.
No, I'm with you. And here's the most interesting part about all this dynamic, and I'll bring it home here so people we were a Dolphin town forever. Pat Riley takes over with Mickey Arison. And, you know, we talk about all the other sports. Oh, yeah, it'll always be a football town. And, yeah, it's a football town. There's no doubt. But 24 years, 25 years later, basketball now is a big part of our community. Jim Larrañaga has made an enormous impact in basketball, building off some of the stuff that was, you know, established from some of the other coaches. He's taken it to another level. That place is sold out constantly. We now are glued into basketball, and they haven't been very good lately, but we're into the draft, we're into summer league, we're a basketball town now. Our ratings are fantastic. We're one of the best in the country, actually, even with the Heat not in the picture the last couple of years. And it's amazing that soccer has exploded in our country. We can watch the Serie A, we can watch the English Premier League anytime we want. The MLS has exploded, and yet men's soccer has done nothing to help that, which is what you would think would be the catalyst. Women's soccer, on the other hand, has done way more for soccer in general in our country to build up a little. We've seen more passion for women's soccer, for our women's national team, 100 times over compared to the men. Why? Because the women are legit, the men aren't. But it is amazing to me how the sport has grown exponentially in this country, and yet we thought it would be the men's soccer team that would be the catalyst that stirs that whole thing, and yet we've been able to grow the sport without the help of the men's national team. How amazing is that?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's some deeper issues there. One is that for the women's national team, That is their only stage. That is their biggest, not only the biggest stage, that's their only stage. I mean, they have a league, but it's really in infancy. That they are known for their national team performances. That is what they are known for. That is what they put all of their pride into, all of their energy, all of their hard work. And they also are marketed, you know, those players, several of them are big national stars. Alex Morgan, everyone knows who she is. Megan Rapinoe, everyone knows who she is. You know, on the men's national team, if you were to ask the average Joe Schmo, Joe Sixpack sports fan to name two players on the men's national team, they may say Landon Donovan, you know.
Right.
Maybe they know Michael Bradley. I don't know. But the truth is the men's team has not been
they don't accomplish anything. You know,
They don't accomplish anything. They have not been marketed. And, you know, part of it is that I think those players are trying so hard to make it professionally wherever they are. You know, the U.S. national team, I hate to say it, but it just doesn't feel to me the way they play, the way they look out there. It doesn't seem to me that they have the same kind of pride in that jersey than the women's team does, or that they do when they're playing for their club teams. You know, I think Pulisic, or, you know, he's a great player, but most of these guys, their money is coming from their club teams, and that's where their passion is, that's where their energy goes. And, you know, that's kind of a deeper issue beyond just, are these guys good enough? I mean, these are professional soccer players. They're playing in professional leagues in MLS and overseas. They know how to play the game. So it makes no sense that when they get together, all of a sudden they forget how to play, or all of a sudden they can't string five passes together, or they don't play with the fight and the grit. And the thing is, the U.S. national team used to be, no matter what, whether they would win or lose, the U.S. team was always known for its grit. It was known for its hard work ethic. You know, it was like, well, the Americans aren't that good, but they work really hard. You know, they chase down every ball. They work really hard. You know, that's the part that is now missing. So now they're not the most skilled players in the world, and they also don't have that trademark hard work ethic and grit that they used to have. And so the combination is what we saw last night.
And I, again, you and I have had this conversation before, and I've brought this up before, okay? You keep describing the 90s teams. You keep describing, you know, Claudio Reyna and Brian McBride and Kobe Jones and all those guys that did bring grit, brought a lot of energy.
Todd Ramos.
Yeah,
Ramos. Alexi Lalas. He was not the most skilled guy.
Right.
Alexi Lalas, you know, was not the most skilled guy, but he always brought it 150%.
Marcelo Balboa. Come on, man.
Balboa.
I mean, come on. So, and I've told you this before, my theory, we have regressed. We have never peaked like that. Those teams under Bruce Arena were our best U.S. national teams, and we have never peaked up to that point. Those were our best teams. We could say Landon Donovan down the line has been the best player, and maybe Pulisic will be even better than all of them, but the best teams, the grit, the emotion, the fire, all those cats played with that. They played with a desire and a love for the jersey that you just talked about. Every time you were describing that, I got goosebumps right now, and they accomplished very little, but those 90s teams, for me, are still our pinnacle of our men's team, which is sad.
Right. Well, they actually, you know, in 2001, when they won, when they made it to the quarterfinal in Japan and Korea, 2000, you know, that team, that's the farthest they've ever gone. That was also under Bruce Arena, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Arena took that team. That team had Landon Donovan, DeMarcus Beasley, and, you know, some of the guys we've mentioned and some other newer guys. But since that time, honestly, since the early 2000s, it's really been a struggle. And, you know, I think Bob Bradley did okay. I mean, they, you know, they did okay in South Africa, you know, in Brazil. They played a great game against Belgium, you know, because Tim Howard was just unbelievable. Tim Howard had, you know, like 18 saves or whatever it was in that game. That was really an unbelievable game that they played. But it's been a struggle the last several years. They really have regressed. And like we've been saying, the thing that bothers me most is I don't see that fire. I don't see the fire. And to me, fire comes from a coach. You know, I mean, these players, they've been playing soccer their whole life. It's not that they don't know how to play. These guys know how to play. They know how to pass a ball. They know how to shoot a ball. They know how to defend. They know what they're doing. But the team collectively is not playing with any kind of passion or purpose. And I really think that's where a coach comes in. You know, I think a coach takes players and gives them, you know, helps them, guide them, and give them purpose and passion and fire. And that's what I see is missing.
Michelle Kaufman, of course, from the Miami Herald, joining us. She joins us every week to talk a little inter-Miami football. And then, obviously, we had to talk about the national team. Can you explain the Pulisic thing? Or are you just as baffled as all of us?
Well, supposedly, it was baffling. Supposedly, he did have flu-like symptoms and was a little bit sick going into the game. That's what the coach, Berhalter, that's what he said, you know, that he was not feeling well and he had a flu and whatever. But clearly, he didn't want to come out. I mean, it looked like he definitely did not want to come out. You know, you've got, this is your best player, period. Your best player. It's like leaving Landon Donovan off the World Cup team. I mean, you've got a really good player. In any other country, that player's playing, no matter what. Even if they're throwing up on the field after,
amen,
that guy's going to play, you know.
I'm with you. Amen. All right, let's move over to Inter Miami. What's going on now with the Mel Reese site? There's an issue now. What's the deal now?
Oh, it's politics. It's Miami politics as usual. You know, you can never, ever get consensus in the city of Miami. It's just, you know, no, you just can't. This is Miami. There always have to be egos involved and personal interests involved and personal agendas involved. So
what's Joe Carollo want now?
Well, it's him and another guy. there were a couple of commissioners that now are saying, oh, we want to just, you know, scrap the whole thing and open it up, open up bidding on that land to other people. Well, you know, the thing is that 60% of the voters voted yes, that they want this soccer team on that site. 60% of the voters, those are your constituents. They have voted. The people have spoken. You know, the team, Jorge Mas said from the beginning, he didn't want to just shove it through without a vote. He wanted to hear from the voters. The voters have spoken.
Strong vote. Strong vote, right, Michelle? Explain that 60% is strong, okay?
60% of anything in Miami is very strong. On top of that, supposedly the neighbors right around there in that neighborhood that's just east of Douglas, those are the actual neighbors that are literally one block, half a block, two blocks from the stadium. That neighborhood itself has been very supportive of the stadium. They like the idea. They like the idea of the other park and amenities and businesses that are going to be there, that are going to provide jobs, whatever. So supposedly the people in those neighborhoods actually are not opposed, even though they're the ones that are the most directly, you know, affected by it. But in any case, there's now a political squabble going on between a couple of commissioners that just want to now start all over and take away, you know, take away that decision and open that land up to bidding from everybody, not just give it to these, to the Jorge Mas group. You know, so now the question is going to be, are they going to drag this on until after the next election to try to get these two commissioners out and get two more positive toward the idea commissioners in? You know, this is all now, this is all politics now. This has really nothing to do with soccer at this point. This is all Miami politics at this point.
How much is this going to be a delay for Inter Miami and whatever date they have to get this site going? And then on the flip side, is there a backup plan to possibly make the Fort Lauderdale Stadium? I know you've told me that it's kind of like a thing that they could easily improve and enlarge and all that. I would imagine that there are some backup plans to say, well, wait a minute, if this might be a home for us a little longer than expected, or maybe even permanently, we got to be ready to make even more improvements to this stadium. You tell me.
I don't think they want their permanent stadium to be there. I think they are going to fight tooth and nail until they get it in Miami. I think they have a two-year cushion, not a two-year cushion, because they obviously would have to start construction at some point. They can't start construction in 2 years. But, you know, they are planning to play in Lockhart for 2 years. So, you know, we're talking about the year 2022 now. They have some time. They have some time to work out the politics of Miami. I think that Jorge Mas is an optimist, and he believes that they are going to work it out. It's really a matter of changing the minds of two commissioners or having another, you know, getting those two commissioners out and two other commissioners in or whatever. So, you know, I think there are definitely political roadblocks here. This is not all signed, sealed, delivered, and done. There are political roadblocks, but Jorge Mas keeps insisting that it's going to happen and he's not worried. And, you know, I don't know if he's lying or he really is just very, very optimistic, but they do have some time because they have the Lockhart site. You know, they can play there this year. They can play there next year. If they had to play another year, they could, but they don't want to. They really want it to be a Miami team. It's going to be continue to be called Inter Miami. They're not going to change the name of the team to Fort Lauderdale or to South Florida, anything. It's going to be Miami. And they want the team in Miami, and that's what they're selling to the players that they're courting and the coach that they're courting and the fans. You know, they're selling it, and to the league and to the sponsors like Heineken and all these other, you know, they want their footprint to be in Miami-Dade County. So for now, they're going to be in Fort Lauderdale, and Fort Lauderdale has been great. City of Fort Lauderdale has given them great, you know,
well, Jack Seiler's a big advocate of soccer and sports overall. So
yes, and you know, I mean, I'm sure they would love to have them stay there, and they would do anything. They will give them whatever freedoms they want. They will, you know, they got their deal in like 5 minutes finished, where, you know, Miami's been 6 years and they're still arguing, you know. So that's the difference between Dade and Broward politics. Unfortunately for Miami, that's what it is. But I do know that
Wait a minute. The caveat is Broward helps out as long as they don't have to put any money. Okay, let's call it like we see it. Broward helps nothing in pro sports. The only reason they got that arena is because Huizenga had incredible power in Broward that he was able to make it happen, but nobody else has ever had that power in Broward. Broward is helpful until they have to write a check. That's all.
Okay.
You know what? Yeah. Let's be honest. Let's just call it like we see it here. I mean, Dade's the only one that really writes the check.
But in Miami, even when the team is writing the check, they're still arguing.
David
Beckham and Jorge Mas and all their deep pockets are saying, look, we're paying for everything. You don't have to pay anything. This isn't going to cost anything to the taxpayers. They're still arguing about it because in Miami, everything is about what everybody's individual pet project is and their feuds that they've had going back decades with this commissioner versus that commissioner and this project versus that project. And if Commissioner A likes this project, then Commissioner B has to make wee wee on it. You know what I mean? It's like, they can't come to an agreement. They just can't have, it's really, I love Miami so much. This is my city. I grew up here. You know, I went to Killian High School, University of Miami. I mean, I am a Miami girl, 305 through and through, but the politics here drive me crazy. I just feel like it's so hard to get consensus on anything. And I don't really know if the people in power are really truly thinking about their constituents and the people in the city, or they're just really thinking a little bit more about themselves. So I don't know what's going to happen here. But they do always have the Lockhart site. I mean, they have that there. That is a cushion. That's a safety net. You know, if they absolutely had to play there and the team was doing great by then or whatever, they could, but 18,000 at that location is not what the league had in mind. And it's not what David Beckham had in mind. And David Beckham wanted waterfront, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, that's not what he was looking for. And, so I don't know. It's complicated. Meanwhile, speaking of other things that are getting complicated, Edinson Cavani, whom I thought and everybody seemed to think was, already basically talking contract with Inter Miami from PSG. Now their words come out from Europe that, he's maybe talking to Juventus, that he wants to go to Juventus. Manchester United is looking at him. Atletico Madrid is looking at him. So, teams that are big time teams that could use some scoring are now looking at him as an option.
Wow.
And if he has a chance to go to Juventus, Man U, or Atletico, I'm not sure where Inter Miami stacks up with those teams, you know?
Yeah, no, of course. And also it's a bigger check that Jorge Mas has to write if you're starting to compete with those kind of guys. So, yeah, then if it's not Cavani, who could be the next option?
Well, they're still saying David Silva. David Silva was the other one. I mean, the thought was that it was David Silva and Edinson Cavani. Those are kind of the two names that have stayed afloat while the other names sank one by one. Those two names were the ones that were still floating in the life raft, in the life raft of hope for the Inter Miami fans. But now, I don't know because I haven't had a personal conversation with him. And, the Inter Miami management, they're not cluing me in on a daily basis to what they're doing, although I wish they would. But, Cavani now it looks like is going to have other suitors, let's put it that way, and big time suitors who are looking at him as somebody to come in and give them scoring right away. It doesn't mean Inter Miami won't get him, but if they do, they're going to have to now be going up against these other teams.
And, of course, Michelle Kaufman joins us every week to talk a little Inter Miami. And today, talking a little football along with Inter Miami with U.S. Soccer. Anything new?
I'm going to throw one name in here. And I don't know. I'm actually going at 4 o'clock today. I'm going to be at Inter Miami for some other interviews, whatever. And, I'm going to ask around. But I am going to throw this name into the hat. Santiago Solari is the name that everybody was saying. But he also now may have some other offers. I still think he is definitely one of the leading candidates. But another name I'm going to throw in here is Marcelo Gallardo of River, of Argentina. He is one of the most highly regarded coaches in the world right now. He's called like the Pep Guardiola of South America. The South American coaches are raving about him. He's done great things down there with a team that was really struggling. He's come in there and done a great job. He has played in a couple of World Cups. He played for PSG, played for Monaco, and he also played in MLS. He played for DC United. So he is familiar with the U.S., you know, Major League Soccer. He has played in Europe. He has coached a big-time team, you know, in Argentina. He is from Argentina. Speaks Spanish, obviously, which I think the coach here will. So I don't know. Believe it or not, Barcelona, there are even some rumors that Barcelona is looking to hire him as a coach. So this is like sort of the new, he's kind of one of the hot coaches now. Let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. He's one of the hot coaches. And there were some reports in Argentine newspapers that Paul McDonough had been down there in Argentina speaking to him to see if he had any interest. So I don't know. It could have been just a conversation. And he said, did you have interest? And he says, no. Then that's a conversation. That doesn't mean he's coming here.
Right.
But I am going to throw his name into the ring.
All right. There you go. Follow her on Twitter so you can find out more on what Inter Miami is going to do at Kauf Sports. And, of course, catch her work at your doorstep or online with the Miami Herald website. I would imagine that the people in Fort Lauderdale, Mayor Jack Seiler, they're all kind of screwed up here going, well, wait a minute. Every time we end up with a soccer team, it's the Miami FC playing here. It's Miami Fusion playing here. And now it's Inter Miami. When the hell do we get Fort Lauderdale on the damn thing? Right? I would imagine the USL team will have a Fort Lauderdale name to it, right?
I would think so. I would think that they would, because they are going to be based there no matter what. You know, even when and if they get a team in Miami, they will. You know, even if they get a team in Miami, the Fort Lauderdale team will be. You know, the USL team will still be in Fort Lauderdale. So
yeah.
I would think they would. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, let's help out Fort Lauderdale with a name that actually goes with the city, man. They keep carrying a team that has Miami on it, which is just a trick.
That was going to be Inter Fort Lauderdale.
There you go. It's a beautiful thing.
Inter
all right.
Lauderdale. Inter Broward.
Michelle,
something. Thank
you as always. Great insight. Always appreciate it. Look forward to next week. All right. Be good.
All right. Take care. Maybe we'll know some more next week.
Let's hope so. You got it. Thank you. You got it. We're running out of October as it is, right? They said they were going to do it by October. So we got about, what is it? Today's the 16th. We got 2 weeks left. So let's go. Let's get it done. They got two more weeks to get that coach.
I remember her saying something about not going anywhere before Halloween.
Right, October.
So they do have... two more weeks,
yeah.
And they're probably going to use every bit of those 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, the way she's saying it now, that it's, you know, going to be pretty, you know, loose.